The War in the Air by H.G. Wells. Chapter 1. Of Progress and the Smallways Family. "This here progress," said Mr. Tom Smallways, "it keeps on." "You'd hardly think it could keep on," said Mr. Tom Smallways. It was along before the War in the Air began that Mr. Smallways made this remark. He was sitting on the fence at the end of his garden and surveying the great Bun Hill gasworks with an eye that neither praised nor blamed. Above the clustering gasometers, three unfamiliar shapes appeared, thin, wallowing bladders that flapped and rolled about and grew bigger and bigger and rounder, balloons in course of inflation for the South of England Aero Club's Saturday afternoon ascent. "They goes up every Saturday," said his neighbor, Mr. Stringer, the milkman. "It's only yesterday, so to speak, when all London turned out to see a balloon go over, and now every little place in the country has its weekly outings, uppings rather. It's been the salvation of them gas companies. Last Saturday I got 3 barloads of gravel off my peditors," said Mr. Tom Smallways. "3 barloads. What they dropped is ballast. Some of the plants was broke, and some was buried. Ladies, they say, goes up. I suppose we got to call M ladies," said Mr. Tom Smallways. "Still, it ain't hardly my idea of a lady, flying about in the air and throwing gravel at people. It ain't what I've been accustomed to consider ladylike, whether or no." Mr. Stringer nodded his head approvingly, and for a time they continued to regard the swelling bulks with expressions that had changed from indifference to disapproval. Mr. Tom Smallways was a greengrocer by trade and a gardener by disposition. His little wife Jessica saw to the shop, and heaven had planned him for a peaceful world. Unfortunately, heaven had not planned a peaceful world for him. He lived in a world of obstinate and incessant change, and in parts where its operations were unsparingly conspicuous. Vicissitude was in the very soil he tilled. Even his garden was upon a yearly tenancy, and overshadowed by a huge board that proclaimed it not so much a garden as an eligible building site. He was horticulture under notice to quit, the last patch of country in a district flooded by new and other things. He did his best to console himself, to imagine matters near the turn of the tide. "You'd hardly think it could keep on," he said. Mr. Smallways' aged father could remember Bun Hill as an idyllic Kentish village. He had driven Sir Peter Bone until he was 50, and then he took to drink a little, and driving the station bus, which lasted him until he was 78. Then he retired. He sat by the fireside, a shriveled, very, very old coachman, full charged with reminiscences, and ready for any careless stranger. He could tell you of the vanished estate of Sir Peter Bone, long since cut up for building, and how that magnate ruled the countryside when it was countryside, of shooting and hunting, and of caches along the high road, of how where the gasworks is was a cricket field, and of the coming of the Crystal Palace. The Crystal Palace was 6 miles away from Bun Hill, a great facade that glittered in the morning, and was a clear blue outline against the sky in the afternoon, and of a night, a source of gratuitous fireworks for all the population of Bun Hill. And then had come the railway, and then villas and villas, and then the gasworks and the waterworks, and a great, ugly sea of workmen's houses, and then drainage, and the water vanished out of the Audubon and left it a dreadful ditch, and then a second railway station, Bun Hill South, and more houses and more shops, more competition, plate glass shops, a school board, rates, omnibuses, tramcars, going right away into London itself, bicycles, motor cars, and then more motor cars, Carnegie Library. "You'd hardly think it could keep on," said Mr. Tom Smallways, growing up among these marvels. But it kept on. Even from the first the greengrocer's shop which he had set up in one of the smallest of the old surviving village houses in the tail of the high street had a submerged air, an air of hiding from something that was looking for it. When they had made up the pavement of the high street, they leveled that up so that one had to go down 3 steps into the shop. Tom did his best to sell only his own excellent but limited range of produce, but progress came shoving things into his window, French artichokes and aubergines, foreign apples, apples from the state of New York, apples from California, apples from Canada, apples from New Zealand. "Pretty looking fruit, but not what I should call English apples," said Tom. "Bananas, unfamiliar nuts, grapefruits, mangoes." The motor cars that went by northward and southward grew more and more powerful and efficient, whizzed faster and smelt worse. There appeared great clangorous petrol trolleys delivering coal and parcels in the place of vanishing horse vans. Motor omnibuses ousted the horse omnibuses. Even the Kentish strawberries going Londonward in the night took to machinery and clattered instead of creaking, and became affected in flavor by progress and petrol. And then young Bert Smallways got a motor bicycle. Bert, it is necessary to explain, was a progressive Smallways. Nothing speaks more eloquently of the pitiless insistence of progress and expansion in our time than that it should get into the Smallways blood. But there was something advanced and enterprising about young Smallways before he was out of short frocks. He was lost for a whole day before he was five, and nearly drowned in the reservoir of the new waterworks before he